Hello, I'm Katie Manning, and you're very lucky because you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Enjoy!
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 431 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we climb out of the secret passageway to find ourselves watching a story that wraps up remarkably quickly, and that's not just because someone takes a header off the roof. I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
And I'm Haley. This week, there are only two episodes to the fifth Doctor story, Black Orchid, and other than the TARDIS, no science fiction whatsoever. Are we sure we're watching classic Doctor Who here?
So the story opens up with the TARDIS returning to Earth, specifically England, in the 1920s.
The Doctor and companions find themselves quickly drawn into a masquerade party at a lavish estate called Cranley Hall, where Nyssa meets her Earthling doppelganger, Anne.
Yeah, things at the party go awry as servants are fatally attacked and the Doctor himself is accused of murder.
And all the while, there are those who seem to know more than they let on, even up to rooms and occupants that some on the estate don't even know exist.
Mother, may I introduce Tegan and Adric?
How do you do? What enchanting names.
And this is Nyssa.
How extraordinary.
Yes, isn't it?
Worcestershire.
Apparently not.
Nyssa, did you say?
Yes.
Forgive me, my dear, but you must be a Worcestershire Talbot.
No, I'm not.
Are you quite sure?
Quite sure.
Robert?
Uncanny. Quite uncanny.
Two peas in a pod. Positively two peas in a pod.
I beg your pardon?
Forgive a pardonable curiosity, my dear, but where are you from?
The Empire of Traken.
Really?
This is short and sweet, but it gets off to a rollicking start because, like, literally fades in from credits and someone getting strangled. Okay, you know you're off to a good story. This is a great cold open. Well, not cold open, but this is a great, you know, rockin' opening scene. The whole idea of getting our TARDIS team here, you know, they're sort of recounting what has just happened in the previous story in the Visitation. A little happy that they are little closer to present day, but still somewhere in the, you know, 1925, I guess.
I liked that we hear that Tegan is willing to continue traveling. She's like, I'm good. I've made a choice. What are you doing taking us back to Earth?
Something has flipped in the Tegan-Jovanka switch there. I'm all in for it. But it allows the entire team to have a little bit of fun with the particular placement on Earth, right? This is like a, I guess you call it like a quaint point in upper class British nobility here, 1920s, 1930s, and there's a lot of money in them thar hills, so they get to enjoy the good life like a cricket match.
Yeah.
Hup.
Who's that? How's it?
So cricket is a sport that I completely understand every time it's explained to me, and then lose all knowledge of it after that explanation.
Okay. In the periods, and I'm glad you say that, because in the periods where you do understand it, mm-hmm. is it an enjoyable sport?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I lose all knowledge. I told you this.
Gotcha. All right. Well, knowledge of the function and knowledge of your enjoyment might be two different things. I was giving you a benefit of the doubt.
So what we're saying is Cricket is like the Silence.
Exactly.
Well, they are dressed very well.
Or yeah. Like the older episodes of Modern Who that I haven't seen in 10 years.
Right.
Right. So
watching this cricket match, it reminded me of a video that I found on YouTube where it's like they actually dramatize what it feels like for an American to watch cricket. And it's like they're saying words, but none of them make sense. There's like a weird chessboard on some, and it is this hilarious video. And it's just, I'm sitting there watching it and I'm like, it took me like 2 minutes the first time I saw it to figure out that they weren't actually playing cricket.
Because as far as you understand it, yep, that must be how cricket works.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this is Peter Davison's sport of choice. Particularly at the time. This was one that he was a quite commendable player on. And I guess during the filming, when they were shooting these scenes, they actually let them sort of play through a game. And he did very well. Out-bowled his batter, or however they refer to the players. Bowling, I know they bowl.
Right.
Right? That term is correct.
Yeah, that's the person that's throwing.
Right. And if you look at the transcripts, when he I thought for the longest time that he was saying, huzzah. When he bowls, he says, how's it? Like, how is it? How's it? Okay. I believe.
It's a sticky wicket.
It's a thing. That's
all I know.
Sticky wicket.
And I don't even know if that is relative to this.
But it allows you. You watch this episode too long, especially at this period, and them dancing the Charleston and all that stuff, and you're going to get some weird expressions like stuck in your ears. And those things are going to stick for a while. But even Tegan kind of plays into it. She starts sharing her sort of modern parlance, and you get the others going, oh, what does that mean? Oh, it doesn't matter. That must be the new expression. This was a time when everybody just wanted to find the new latest and greatest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Tegan was all in, and meanwhile, Adric, stuff your face. I can't dance. I'm just gonna... And apparently, that was Waterhouse's choice.
He's a high school boy at a dance. It works.
Right. He is at. All right. Each one of our characters was exactly who they needed to be, stuck in that time in that place. Tegan reveling in the fact that she's at a high class function, but you've got, and then you've got Nyssa, who's just loving the fact that she has found
a doppelganger.
She found herself.
Herself. Her twin.
And that yet again, what you said fits exactly where. They have never heard of where she's from, and she just rattles it off quite a few times, and they're just like, oh, that must be over there where the fancy place is.
They keep fishing. They keep fishing. Nope. Nope. She finally tells them truthfully, like, oh, that must be. Yeah. Oh, that's over at the West End. I don't know. Loved it. I loved it. There's such clever aspects to this particular, to just that tee up. But the whole idea of the Cranleys themselves... we meet Lady Cranley at the towards the end of the match,
mm-hmm.
and she's sort of she's making pleasantries with all of them and invites them back to the party. We've got the tee up to the fact that the Doctor is so quickly welcomed in because of the Doctor who was not on site as planned.
Mm.
Circumstances. No, there's no such thing as a coincidence, right? All these things happen for a reason. TARDIS got you there exactly when you needed to be, not when you wanted to be. But as far as just the way that they settle this up, knowing that we began with a murder that doesn't really get discussed for a while thereafter, how did the setup for episode one of this story sit with everybody as you're sort of taking it in, just sort of getting a feel for how this unusually quick moving story rolls out?
It's a murder mystery. Like we've all watched these. We've all had some experience with it, so it doesn't take a whole lot for us to get pulled into it, especially given the period aspect of it. Because, we grew up on movies like Clue or Murder by Death, which all kind of have that period pastiche to it. So it's the fact that, it's a period piece. We're in the 1920s. Somebody gets killed right off the bat. And then there's a cricket game, so it's like the stakes aren't super high, so we can kind of have some fun with it. It draws you in so well.
Doesn't anybody notice that, I don't know how many servants they had on site. You kept seeing the same faces, because obviously only a certain number of supporting extras there to be able to fill out the roles. But doesn't anybody notice that one or two of your principal staff are missing
nah.
for a while? Well, that, they have names? What are they?
The kitchen. It's fine.
That was the thing, though, was like they kept on explaining that it's this was somebody hidden from the rest of them. Like they had the staff, and then they had the other staff.
The nursing staff.
Right, right.
Which nobody's supposed to know about, because why would you need a nurse?
Of course. But the doctor stumbles upon the secret passageway, and, well, stumbles upon. It gets left open as he's halfway getting himself prepared for the bath, and then goes and gets himself locked in a bathrobe.
I have to admit that it was appropriate that he says, how do I always do this to myself?
He's starting to become very self-aware. True. You would have gotten a very different dialogue from the doctor if this were still Tom Baker.
Yeah.
At this point. I don't think you'd get Tom Baker in a bathrobe either.
It would have been a funnier bathroom.
It would have been a far funnier
bathroom. Or it would have just been no coat, just the button-up shirt still buttoned all the way to the top. And like you're supposed to assume that that was the next stage was the bathrobe, and he just didn't quite get there.
Yeah.
No, I love the fact that our whole primary cast wound up in different outfits. So it was nice to see everybody actually get a chance. But Adric still, like, full costume, still has his little star.
Of course. Well, he's well, for damn Matt's. Proud of it. Yes.
In case anybody needed to have maths done or needed to know that that's what he does.
If somebody wanted to count the hors d'oeuvres that he was eating.
Well, here's the thing. He tapped into how many times he had gone back to the chafing tables, right? He was like, he's like me at a buffet. This is about the bargain. You got to get your money's worth out of this thing. Pace it. Start with the vegetables. Work your way up to the gravy.
Paying for a buffet is a bet. I am betting you that I can eat more food than you're charging me for.
I do the same thing with bottomless mimosas.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah. Right.
Got to beat the house.
I also think at one point he was offered more of a specific type of food, and he's like, no, I'm not ready for that yet. Like, mapping this out.
Well, as Kira was saying, you got to eat it in a certain order to make sure there's room for everything.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, we got this great setup, this very, as Jay said, you know, classic British murder mystery, whether you're referring to television mysteries at the time or even some of the longer form stuff. The idea of the mistaken identity. Another murder occurs in full view of a few people, and yet it is not the assailant that we believe it to be because, we're at a costume party, because why not? Masquerade balls are a great opportunity to be able to allow murders by creepy freaking Harlequin masks. Thanks. Awesome. Although continuity error, our murderer loses his hunchback quite considerably when he's in the Harlequin costume.
Look, when you're a clown, you can be anybody.
A suspension of disbelief. I do not believe that I am a disfigured...
It's a very structured costume. Provides a lot of back support.
It's got a lot of, you know, underwire in the back. Just pulls the spine straight. Yeah.
When the doctor starts taking it off later, you do see it's like a bunch of layers. So I believe it.
Yeah, quite a bit. Oh, yeah. It's probably a corset.
Some boning.
Yeah. That's it. Although Julie brought up the excellent point, the moment the doctor puts on the mask and she just looks over and goes, ugh, what's it gotta smell like in the costume?
Because he was running up and down. He was clearly in their stressful situations.
Choking somebody to death. Choking you know, somebody. Your heart rate elevates.
How does the doctor not go, ugh, not wearing that? Yeah.
Yeah, nobody else had a problem with their costume. The fact that they said, oh, we have extras about for people that come unprepared. Like, yeah, go grab them from the funk box.
However, she also says, I specifically ordered this number of them. So if anybody was something else, no, you couldn't have done.
The doctor just wanted to be the Harlequin so bad he didn't care how it smelled. Right.
This is what they told me to wear. I must play my part.
Could be. Yeah, there's another classic observation on that is that Anne argues that there was no way that there could be another Harlequin costume because she ordered a very specific number, and yet there are exactly two blue moth costumes.
Yeah. So,
yeah, because that was going to be a prank of hers. Like, before she had a doppelganger, she was just going to have somebody that looked similar to her wear it to try and trick people.
Or I would believe
She planned on dancing a costume to shreds and putting
she
on
She spills a lot of food on herself.
She's a messy human being, and she knew something bad would happen.
I tend to fall down a lot. we breeze through the first episode really quickly. You know, it does not feel like the 24 minutes or so that it is, because it just goes from, okay, TARDIS arrives, here we are, boom, boom, boom. Oh, crap, cricket match. Okay, oh, got invited back for a party. Oh, party's on. Oh, another death. Oh, secret passages. Oh, a death happening right in front of us, and they're heading for us. Boom, we roll the credits after episode one. So we're establishing a great pace. Mm-hmm. I got to put myself for a moment in the shoes of the viewing audience who have been accustomed to four-episode stories. In that perspective, knowing that, you know, when you get into a new tour with your TARDIS team, you're expecting a month's worth of entertainment. And this much has been thrown at you in the first episode. So there's no reference in Radio Times or any other guides that are published at the time to tell you that you're expecting this to wrap up within two episodes. They have no idea. They have to take it from week to week. That's how the suspense builds. Mm-hmm. I think that's got to be a fascinating decision on the production part to say, you know what, we're just going to throw this at them at about, you know, 150% speed here, and then we're going to wrap it up next week and confuse the heck out of them.
I don't think that this story would have played out well if it were longer. I feel like it would have dragged, and that would have been to the detriment of the mystery of it. If you try to solve this over four episodes instead of the two tight, funny, there's air where it needs to be, but there's also the quick pace of you said, he said, she said at the right times, mm-hmm. and then it wraps. And I think that it was very effective.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we said about classic Who stories that, you know, it could have been cut down to, you know, however many stories? And this one did exactly that. Like, it's rare that we say, you know, the story could have gone a little bit longer. I don't think this one necessarily fits that. I think that we got the story we were told, and there really wasn't much room to pad it out. I mean, what, we had 3 minutes of a cricket match, mm-hmm. you know.
But that was part of the sort of the act one fluff.
Mm-hmm.
It was team building for the Doctor, and he, you know, it was him ingratiating himself with the family, which mm-hmm. was important to what came next, and right. that they did trust them, invited them back, and said, oh, you must stay. If he was terrible at cricket, this story would have gone very differently.
Okay, well, you've got a train to catch, don't you? Bye.
Yeah. Oh, cricket. I thought you said badminton. He's just running around with a racket. Mm. Yeah. So if that's the case, there are no aspects of this story that you felt could have gotten worked a little further? Because I have one little grievance with the story. And that's just the fact that I feel like the reveal, I sussed it out very, very early. I remember first seeing this when I was, God, I don't know, I don't even know what age, but elementary school. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the ones that when Davison and Baker stories were getting broadcast on PBS, in strange order, as we've established, but because this was a two-parter, it often got presented back-to-back. And even as a kid, I knew George was George.
Yeah.
Hmm. I did not pick up on George was George until they said, it's George. Oh. Like, oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Then that means that it was just a matter of, you know, they throw it out there, and if some of the audience picks up on it, great. And if they don't.
I have to admit, I think it's because I wasn't expecting that kind of reveal from a Doctor Who story, though.
Gotcha.
Kind of expecting the Master to come up because they name checked him in the episode, and he hasn't been around in a while. I was like, oh, is this the Master coming back?
Yeah. Yeah. When they talk about the Master of the House. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice little self-aware.
Right. And the fact that the Doctor kind of like the Master, like you see him like cotton on to that and they're like, yeah, you know, the other Doctor. it was a fun way to kind of play with the expectations of the audience. I feel like it might have been a little simple. They didn't hide it extremely well, but they didn't really need to. I mean, if they had tried to throw in other red herrings or things like that, you might have gotten another episode or so out of this, but then we would have been complaining that it ran too long.
The only way you get to four episodes is if at the end of part two, it's like, here's the alien that did this to George, and now we're going to completely flip this into a different gear.
Yeah. I guess I look at it as if you get to the point where you get through the first episode and you realize, oh, okay, they're sticking to this. They're just going with a straight murder mystery on it. Okay, we're not gonna throw extra baddies in this. There's not the usual, what we would expect to be like the second episode turn that suddenly says the villain you thought all along was just a pawn to this greater villain, and the truly big bad is still behind the curtain. Then that's something else. But this didn't have the format for that. This is one where, because of the fact that you see the murder happen within the first 3 seconds of the first episode, you're like, okay, we know that there's one person in action here, and no one seems to know who this person is, even though it's happening within this building. But wait, mom's acting weird. And that's where we've got the loose thread that the doctor gets the opportunity to pull on, right? That's what brings us around to our revelation in, I'll call it Act 2, Episode 2, is the fact that mom is not mentioning the Brazilian native played by someone from India with a plate lip. I don't really know exactly what they were doing there. I'm not really, it was so clunkily done. I'm not really sure if I'm supposed to be offended by it, but I feel kind of offended by it.
I felt offended and I didn't know which group to be most offended for.
Right.
Yeah.
It problematic. Absolutely. But vague enough that there was no specific offense.
Or it was such a broad stroke. Everybody's offended.
Just make everyone feel a little uncomfortable. It'll be fine.
Yeah. It's like if everyone's questioning whether or not they're offended, then we're okay because nobody's actually offended.
Or if nobody in the room is not offended, then we're all in agreement.
Yeah, I don't think that kind of thing would fly in a current modern episode of the same type. So,
but it did provide for, I understand what they were trying to do, the whole idea of, you know, George, and that was, I think, what I picked up on is because when I was a kid, the whole explanation that he was on an expedition into South America and disappeared in pursuit of the Black Orchid, that thing made it back. How did that thing make it back? Because the local tribes protected it, but they didn't protect George. Wait a second. And that's where I took it apart. But I think that's a kind of an interesting premise, just from a murder mystery standpoint. That's kind of, you know, cool little mechanic there to use. So kudos to Terrence Dudley for deciding to use that. Kudos, though, in general to the Doctor Who production team for having the guts to say, you know what? Screw this. We're going to take our science fiction, time traveling, space traveling team and stick them into a whodunit for 2 weeks. Just cause.
Yeah. Why not?
Exactly. The show can do what it wants. There really are very few rules that say you can or can't do anything on this
they
show.
They did not give underage people alcohol.
Very true. Give them just orange juice. Well, to be fair, Nyssa and Adric didn't know what they were ordering. Yeah. Tegan knew darn straight what she was ordering.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, this flight attendant knows how to drink. Give her what she wants.
Exactly. Yeah. She's like, and don't use them little stupid bottles either. You know,
real drink, please. I'm not on a plane.
Top shelf, Nigel.
I'm wondering how prevalent was vodka in 1920s England?
Very.
This is the flapper period, dude. Very.
I don't know. That's why I was asking. I don't know.
My question is, how prevalent was apparently not at all alcohol on the TARDIS?
Tegan's been dying for a drink for a while.
She's like, this is why we travel. Oh.
We've established in Modern Who, the Doctor keeps his brandy and stuff locked away in cabinets. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I love so many aspects of just the little comfortable bits of the story, the opportunity for the characters to just have a little bit of fun. But the surprising thing is, though, writ large, the cast hated this story.
Oh. I was thinking it looked like it would have been a lot of fun to film. It's like, oh, let's go play cricket and dance and...
The cricket match, sure. The whole dance party and all that stuff. Apparently, there were torrential winds and intermittent rains through that thing, which is why you see continuity errors. Like, at one point, the party out in the terrace is bone dry, and then the camera cuts to another angle, and everything's soaking wet.
Oh, I wasn't paying that close attention. Yeah.
You did see the wind, though. You saw the fact that a lot of times when they're shooting outside, everybody's getting kind of tousled around.
It made it feel real to me, though.
True. Very true. But apparently that made for a real headache with the filming.
Yeah.
No, they didn't like the story because they felt there was no dramatic tension. It was, oh, okay, there was a murder. Let's find the murderer. Oh, there he is. What should we do about him? Ah!
Yeah.
To be fair, that's true. There is not dramatic tension.
They're not
wrong. The resolution is the guy falls off the roof.
This is a super thin solution to this story.
It seemed like a shell to put around Peter Davison wanting to play cricket.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with that. But I mean, it's that is my grievance. Well, two grievances. One is the way that they portray Brazilian native South Americans, you know, and that's... I don't really know. I think they didn't really... Well, the internet wasn't around yet. It was 1982. They didn't have the Encyclopedia Britannica.
And nobody had ever been to Brazil.
Sure. Well, huge swaths of the rainforest nobody had mapped out yet. So who knows what's going on in there? But yeah, then the conclusion, the fact that it gets wrapped up inside of about 2.5 minutes.
From the climbing up the front...
Yep, climbing up the wall.
Yeah, the front of the wall... And then you meant to not push, but then you just... Bleh.
Brother, no,
Yeah.
And it had to be his brother.
Well, of course.
Let's go back to the Brazilian for a second. You could have just had his, like, manservant be an Indian person, which would work very well for the time period and the type of career he was in.
Hello, colonization.
And you could have used the same actor and not done everything else that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some blemishes within the jewel, for sure. The clarity on this particular stone is not rated that high. But I think that it is, as far as what they set out to do, and as far as the gamble that they took with saying, you know what, let's do a whodunit, let's wrap it up in 2 weeks so that the audience goes, wait, what? It's over? Mm-hmm. What the hell's coming next week? To be continued. Come find and tune in to find out. I think that's a great gamble. I think they did a nice job in the execution.
How prevalent were whodunits at that time?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I feel like this is almost one of those crossover shows. They just didn't have anybody from a different show come on.
Right?
They just said, we're going to take your story, we're going to do it, and then none of you get to come play. But we're going to do some of the activities that you would see and allow the characters to have a little bit of fun.
The rumor has it that this was a script that Terrence Dudley had sitting around in a folder and somebody decided to map it into Doctor Who. It wasn't written originally for Doctor Who.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It screams it all over the
story.
Page. But it's not a bad story.
No.
Right?
George and the other brother, were they supposed to be twins?
Close to it.
No, they said younger, older brother. Okay. The painting was of the same actor. Yeah.
Right. So to establish the family resemblance.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all Cranleys.
Close enough.
Yeah.
I think at that time, that was kind of common. Like, if the oldest brother and the families were meant to be merged, then there you go.
Then there's Anne. She's like, Anne Peggy. As far as the high points and low points, right? I like the fact that this is short, sweet, direct, to the point. Mm-hmm. To establish the whodunit. If you sussed it out in the first episode, great. If you didn't, and it's a surprise to you in the closing 2.5 minutes, where everything gets resolved, great. Hope you enjoyed it. I like that. low point for me personally was the fact that it was wrapped up in 2.5 minutes.
I'm glad they didn't try and stretch it into 4 parts.
Sure.
Strong decision making on their part for this story.
What if we establish some more hidden corridors? What if we just run up and down some more hidden
corridors? We can stretch the cricket game out across 2 episodes, right?
We can pan in and away from that black orchid a few more times.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
I don't know. Clue was 1985, right? I think somebody might have been inspired. Yeah. I agree. I think this one is definitely worth the rewatch. It's quick. It's short. It's sweet. It's fun. I can definitely see myself going back to this one. As far as the recommendability, yeah, it's like I said, it's had it been longer, I don't think it would have been nearly as enjoyable. Like had they done the standard 4-episode treatments that they typically do, I don't think that I would have enjoyed it nearly as much, nor would I think that I would recommend it. But for what it is, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's, you know, go into it with a grain of salt, perhaps, with, you know, 1980 race relations. But yeah.
It does. You bring up a good point about the fact that the rewatchability on it has some merit because it doesn't require a lot of backstory knowledge of how Doctor Who works mechanically, right?
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of interaction between the companions, which mm-hmm. we've seen them in very serious and stressful situations. And this was more, at least right up till the end, mm-hmm. a very fun interaction between all of them for various reasons, like right. both at the cricket match and then ordering the drinks and then doing dancing and eating and the way that they were still sort of playing their same roles, but a little different, a little bit more carefree.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, like you mentioned, they were complaining that there was a lack of dramatic tension. And for me, I feel like that worked in its benefit. Like I was able to just sit and enjoy it and have fun with it. And it wasn't something that I felt like it was more of a romp than anything else. And that was fantastic.
And even those couple of moments where it required a little bit of working knowledge, like because of the fact that they were trying to be very careful about not tipping too much to the locals, mm-hmm. I should say the temporal locals about who and what they really were. When it gets to the point of the arrest and the fact that the cops are saying and the doctor saying, just take me to the train station. If I can find my blue box, it'll explain everything. And then they, you know, the box has been moved and that whole, you know, silly little moment, which was fun, by the way.
Yeah.
But bringing the cops into the TARDIS.
Yeah. And then taking them back to the estate in the TARDIS. Right.
We can get you back there quicker. Yeah. So, boom, there. Add to your list of people who have traveled in the TARDIS. If you've been keeping track at home, you can add, you know, your local constable and so forth. But that, take that from the perspective of somebody that you're handing a, if they're just starting to establish a Doctor Who viewing repertoire, and you want to give them some classic, and you don't want them to have to think too much about how the complexities of time travel and how, you know, the Doctor has manipulated things has worked. If they're coming into this really early, this is a nice little story to do that because it requires so little of science fiction backstory, but puts enough in that is silly enough through the eyes of the uninitiated, the cops,
mm-hmm.
that it kind of would help a viewer too.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think that's kind of fun. And anything else that goes a little bit beyond that or requires a little bit of additional, it just kind of goes over their head. That's just extra dialogue that doesn't matter. So yeah, for me personally, I think this works for rewatchability for sure. And recommendability. I think this is a safe one to hand to somebody to say, you want a Fifth Doctor story? That's just fun. Here, suck it up in 2 episodes. You're done. And get a gist for what the TARDIS classroom was all about. Mm-hmm.
That, and I feel like this is a fair representation of our Fifth Doctor too. You know, he's starting to feel more of himself. He is definitely separating himself from the Fourth Doctor. And it's, you do kind of get to see his personality come through in some of these moments. So yeah.
It's a great point. Yeah. He handles things considerably differently than how Baker ever would, or that they would ever write Baker's Doctor to ever handle these things. For sure.
I agree. I would recommend it for all those reasons. And I really enjoyed the companions' playfulness. Mm. And I think that coming off of, you know, if anybody's trying to do a watch in order, or if they're watching some other additional serious episodes, then I'd say take a little breather, have a moment, and then dive back into something more serious and more dangerous.
That's fascinating foreshadowing for the story to come. That's all.
Spoilers!
No, I'm not spoiling. Hey. I'm just saying.
Wow, tone spoiler, Keir. Jeez.
No, it's not even. I'm just saying, you know, you can't roll these dice that often and say, oh, you know what, next week, they're going to just play checkers for 3 weeks. 3 episodes of playing checkers, but it's really riveting.
I would rewatch, I would recommend, for all the reasons everybody said. My only caveat on recommendability is I feel like it gives you a good feeling of the characters, but not of necessarily Whovian storytelling, just true, because it's not really a Doctor Who story. So it's fun to meet this Doctor and these companions, but I wouldn't want this to be like the first thing anybody ever saw, just because it's...
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's no aliens, there's no space, there's no, not really any time travel, just yeah, not a lot of the staples of Doctor Who in it.
Yeah. If you're giving this to people as like a top five, put this around like 4. Then get some other stuff under their belt first.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch some Doctor Who. Watch this. Watch some more Doctor Who.
Because this
again, this is your swap episode. This is where you, in any sort of current time where they've done episodes that sort of match, like when you take Warehouse 13 and you have someone from Eureka pop into it or vice versa, mm-hmm, this would have been that kind of episode where...
Oh, yeah, your crossover, yeah.
Yeah, your crossover, where you're dealing with something from another show that is about the Cranleys, mm-hmm, and you introduce the Doctor team. Right, you have Doctor Who characters and actors come in and do this little takeaway, and then someone who said, "Ooh, I liked how they handled themselves during this episode. Maybe I'll watch that other show called Doctor Who." But mainly, they were a Cranleys weekly watcher.
See, I think Lord Stone, was he like the chief of police or whatever? It's his show, and this is just the right party that he was at that started his case for the week.
There you go. Something like that, where it's the crossover that you got a bit of it, and now you're intrigued to go and watch either one of the other one that you maybe didn't have exposure to until you're like, oh, my favorite show is having these other people on.
Yeah, I don't know how many series I got tipped off to because of crossover episodes. Has that really worked for any of you personally?
It's how I started watching Torchwood.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah. Spinoffs, I get
that. That's a spin-off.
No. Not spinoff. The first time I watched anybody from Torchwood was when we have Gwen come in at the end of the 10th Doctor. So not even really, like, that is them coming in as Torchwood as a bit of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was like, I want more of her.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
I mean, yep. Any of the major CW superhero crossover events.
Okay, yeah, yep. And that's, yeah, that's a programmatic marketing move on their part.
I think all of Dick Wolf's procedurals have done that too.
True.
Sure, yeah. And it's, but a lot of times it's not even just a matter of saying, all right, I have this production, I want you to watch this other production of mine personally, Eric Kripke or what have you, or Dick Wolf. It's a matter of the network says, crap, we got to get these two totally different genres. We got these two mega blocks going on over here. We got our nerds watching their nerdy stuff, and we got our creepy creepers watching their mystery stuff. We got to figure out how to get these things to blend.
Yeah, so it's like the ER and Chicago Fire crossovers. Right?
It's not, it is easier to push murder mystery into science fiction than it is to push science fiction into murder mystery. That's, you know, do you put the oil or the vinegar into the shaker first?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I think they did a good job, and I want to go watch the show about the detective, right, and or the Cranleys.
Meet the Cranleys. Top hole.
That woman could make terrible choices about her family every episode.
Absolutely. Oh, did I not mention my second husband? Bum, bum, bum.
There were a lot of tunnels. She could have a lot of kids stashed away.
Oh my God, so many cabinets. So many cabinets.
That doll has a whole backstory.
Oh, the freaking creepy doll whose eyes are watching you.
All right.
It has a broken mouth.
Swallows.
You whole.
I don't know if any of you are familiar. Well, I know one of you is familiar with Russell T. Davies' series, It's a Sin, available on HBO Max, for those of you watching in North America. Great series. It has launched many careers. Ali Alexander is your lead in that particular series, and has a skyrocketing career right now in the UK for television and music. And apparently, over the course of 3 days, the rumor mill went berserk that he was going to be the next Doctor.
Oh, jeez.
There was so much certainty because they did an episode of It's a Sin where he was looking for acting work and got squared off against a Dalek.
Oh, jeez.
As an extra. Nice. I mean, this takes place in the 1980s in the UK. So should have had a Sylvester McCoy cameo somewhere. but anyway, it set up this whole thing where everyone said, well, yeah, that would work perfectly. And Ollie, being sort of the cad that he is, was sort of kind of playing around with social media to sort of say,
why would you deny it if you're like, but could I?
Yeah, you let it float long enough and maybe your phone will ring, right?
Look, someone said something and we can't take it back now, so hope you're free.
Well, it blew up big over the course of 24 or 36 hours, where all these news outlets were saying, maybe it could work. It was getting up to the Radio Times side of things. And finally, his agent had to come out and say, no.
I love the statement, though. It's very playful.
The way it was done is very, very fan-serving. It's great. Read it out. This is lovely.
Even though Ollie is often contacted by Cybermen, I'm afraid I have to exterminate this speculation. As nice as it is to see interest in this story regenerate, it's just not true. As oud as it might sound, Ollie is focusing on his music for the time being.
Har, har, har.
Har, har.
Four good puns in there. Yes. Nicely done.
I think there were five, weren't there?
Cybermen, exterminate. Cybermen,
exterminate. Regenerate. Oud as it might sound, for the time being.
Five for five. Well done. Yeah. So back to the drawing board. Somebody brought up a very good point in one of the articles that was referencing this and said that while this would have been a kind of a nice fit, it would have been a tremendously young casting. I think Ollie is mid-20s or so. It would have been much younger than even Matt Smith at the time. But the fact that the connection of saying, well, it's possible because of the connection through RTD, it would be more likely that whoever you see step into the role of the 14th would be someone where, if it happens while it is still under Chibnall's guard, that it would be somebody that he has worked with personally, because that really kind of feeds in much better to the screen testing and the cast selection, a la Jody, really. So I don't know. So we're back to kind of square one on this. So take your UK bookies for what they claim. Their numbers are all over the place. They still think that it's going to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge or Chris Marshall. Can we please get that name stricken from the record?
I mean, before Jody was cast, wasn't everybody positive it was going to be, what's his face, Redmayne?
Eddie Redmayne?
Yeah. That what all the betting markets were saying, two weeks prior to Jody's announcement?
I don't know if he was top of the charts, but he was way up there on the odds. Yeah, for sure. I don't know.
I'd watch that.
Would you though? Would you though?
I feel like it's too similar to Matt Smith.
Yeah.
But he would have to play it so differently. I mean, his looks are similar enough, but I feel like I like his depth, and I feel like he could do something different.
He's a medium between Tennant and Smith.
Yeah.
He's got Tennant's dramatic chops and Smith's sort of affability and sort of childishness.
I don't think he'd play it goofy.
I thought you were going to say he had Tennant's emotional hair.
Yes, he does have quite striking hair. That's true.
The Doctor's always wanted to be ginger.
Yeah. It's kind of one of the requirements, right? Something creative with the hair. Right. So.
But that leads me back to saying the whole Phoebe thing, she was also part of the Broadchurch cast. And she was solid in that show. As one of the barristers. So anyway, I don't know. I would not be surprised if that happened. But we don't know. We're still far away from that. We still have a whole another series to get through and things. But
2 years away.
2 years away. Well, yeah. One thing that we've been, I think we all of us here have been sort of collectively using to occupy our time in the long wait for the next series is this Marvel thing, right? It's got this trickster god thing in it. You might have heard of
what?
It. Yeah. He's, you know, he's a Brit too. So, you know, he could do it. But they've been drawing a lot of parallels between the two shows because it involves time travel and time manipulation. Go figure. But I wanted to ask all of you, because there's many articles. We happened to pop one particular article in here for the news because of the fact that so many people are sort of making these connections. But every time another episode of the Loki series comes out, a bunch of writers, freelance writers say, this is the one where they're paying an homage to Doctor Who. And then the next episode goes on, no, this is the one.
How about the whole show is an homage to?
You can't, just because they happen to travel in time, the moment they step out of the little glowy door, you can't say, wait a second, that's where they're paying tribute to. But have any of you been sort of particularly seeing that, or has it been something that's been sort of fed to you by the media as saying, oh, there's so many parallels?
I feel like the Doctor Who writers haven't had anything to write about for a very long time, and everything is a Doctor Who reference now.
Right.
I made the comparison when the first trailer dropped. I was pointing out the similarities, like look at that, and look at this, and look at that thing, and look at even the poster. It looks like Gallifreyans in the background, and blah blah blah. And then, I mean, since the show has started, I picked up on the "you're the thief with the blue box" thing, but that was the only time I was like, "Oh, that's a yeah, okay, moving on."
I haven't really paid attention to that, other than kind of like you're saying, as far as time travel is concerned, I like that they are playing with it, and I appreciate it. But unless Doctor Who is the everything I compare it to, it's not. Then no.
The thing that keeps me from drawing any sort of really direct parallel in the way that they play with time travel or their particular take on it as the TVA deals with it is the idea of variance. With Doctor Who, every time you go back and you double back on timelines and things like that, it very rarely directly addresses the idea of alternate timelines and having to deal with the repercussions of those changes insofar as running into different versions of yourself that made the other decision, that diverging path. That was something that Marvel leaned into hard during Endgame,
mm-hmm.
Right?
We've seen one episode where that did happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Rose and her father with the church.
Right, Father's Day.
Father's Day. There were huge time rifts and there would have been nothing left. Right. So I don't know if that is the way they go with this variant continuing and this whole spoilery bits, but mm-hmm. Yeah, then maybe I will say yes, but we'll get there. Yeah. And have a special episode where we can talk about it, where we can tell people if they're spoilers, skip to the end.
Right. Right. So kudos to Paul Cornell for nailing that one as far as knowing what the MCU is going to be doing with,
with way their treatment
of time travel.
Yeah.
Although I will say the reason why I included this particular article for the news inclusion was because there was and it's this little blurb that I shared with everybody here where it talks about the choice of the name.
Are we getting spoilery?
It is spoilery. If you are not familiar with the Loki series and you're waiting to absorb it when the whole thing is available, great. Then don't read the article yet for obvious reasons. If it's something that you are up to speed, go ahead and read it, because one of the closing arguments that this particular writer for The Escapist magazine does is it talks about the whole idea of the name of the Doctor, which I think is a really, it's an interesting take. It's something that I don't think anybody else who's been writing about it has particularly tapped into. So I think it's an interesting little thought exercise at best. Last thing I want to share with everybody is something that just came across came across my Twitter feed, and I started seeking a little bit more about it, and I absolutely love it, and I think that it needs to be amplified, and it has to do with this gentleman by the age of, I think he's 19, in the UK, Louis, who is as a result of neuroblastoma, I believe, lost his sight at an extremely early age, and had been reading books through Braille, but he was a very big fan of Doctor Who, but could only experience it to a certain depth because he said, as he, picture watching the series and just closing your eyes and just trying to absorb as much as you can just from what's being described on screen, or the blasting noises and the soundtrack swelling and things. And it hasn't stopped him from being a Doctor Who cosplayer from an early age and everything else. So now at age 19, he's familiar with a group called Living Paintings that do books adapted for blind and sight impaired and partially sighted people, that it's more than just a Braille book. It is actually, the illustrations are done as raised images, sort of embossed images and things, so that you can get a full feel for what you're looking at or trying to describe. And the hope was that they've done a series of all sorts of different books Living Paintings has done a series of all these things. They've never done anything Doctor Who. They have a great reputation as being a very family-oriented. This is something where the entire family can gather around, because both the people with sight and people who are partially sighted or blind can all enjoy the books as a family reading experience. And he recognizes Doctor Who as being always oriented as a family consumption show.
Yeah, and so it's awesome.
Wanted to see the connection between it. Problem being, Living Paintings is not a limitless budget. It's a very tiny little organization. Probably, I don't even know if they're a nonprofit, but they're probably very small scale. They don't have the funds to be able to do something of this sort, even if they had the BBC's blessing. So he's doing a crowdfunder on this, and is a third of the way, as of today, as of our recording today, he's a third of the way towards his goal. It has some 40-odd days to go, I believe. So the opportunity is there. 50 days. Has got the attention of a number of individuals within the Doctor Who scope, including Derek Jacobi, who recorded a nice little segment for him to try to get people encouraged to contribute. And I would love to see this work. I think it's fantastic. I had no idea that these kinds of books, these tactile books, had been done. That, I'm familiar with Braille. Everybody knows Braille. Mm-hmm. But going that one step further into taking the illustrations and making them tactile is just fantastic.
I can't imagine what that would feel like when someone would be able to see the TARDIS for the first time like that.
Right.
That would just be amazing.
See the aliens the Doctor is squaring off against and get something that's more than just a description of, they're over there, they're in the dark. Ooh. Yeah.
that would be amazing.
So, yeah. Look into it, please. Open the link. If it's not something for you, at least amplify the message to get the word out to others, because there may be others who might have the means. It might not be something within your particular capacity at the moment. Absolutely understandable, but somebody else might. So get the message out there, please.
Well, next week we're going to be coming back with our one of our favorites, the Whovian mixology. This time we are taking a look at companions.
Yes. So we have to do this a very specific way, right? Rather than just saying, all right, I'm going to give everybody a fixed list of companions. The doctors, you're dealing with the doctors. With the when we did the villains, I pretty much sort of force fed the list of villains with one exception and said, pick your wild card in the end there, and then pick your master iteration.
Jeez, just tell me what to do.
Right. Well, sometimes I got to give you a limited number of pieces in the puzzle box. But with this one, let's do something a little bit different. So it's going to play into the idea of the whole, the iterations of the doctor, but you've got companions of each doctor's era. So if you want to do a Hartnell companion, you've got Barbara, Ian, Susan, Vicky. You can go about it that way. If you want to do if you want to do Clara, if you want a Clara drink, you have to decide, is that an 11th Clara or a 12th Clara,
or why can't we have both?
Because they're very different people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we're doing drinks, one companion per doctor, then
precisely.
You could pick. You could do both. There's also
lots of Claras.
Right.
Lots of
Claras. I was going to say, there's a lot more than 11.
It's a wine flight.
It's death.
Oh.
Too soon.
It's not. For the sake of clarification, because we don't really have a lot to. Yes, you're very smart. Now shut up. We will not have a war doctor companion. Non-televised. Mm-hmm. And obviously we don't have a Ruth doctor companion.
Fair.
Okay. So everything else within there. So take your televised 13. Go with those. And if record shows, if everything holds steady, Haley's going to be off next week. Because she keeps bailing on these. She's got a backlog of drink orders I'm waiting from her. It's one of these days we'll get them.
We will continue to hold this episode until Haley's ready. We will on the fly come up with a different topic if you don't show up. Just saying.
I for real will not be here next week.
No. Oh, we'll have a guest in
Haley
the
studio Malley.
Later next week.
Oh, we should.
We totally
should. Haley, what?
Talk about it later.
This has been episode 431 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, you know, I remember the Phantom of the Opera having a lot more music in it before.
And this is Gare saying, screwdriver, please.
And this is Julie saying, I'm going on vacation with the Cranleys, but not the mom.
And this is Haley saying, Jay, it's just a hug.
We'll see you next week.
Allons-y!
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.
Anyway.
Somebody's gonna leave a message. It's gonna be me.
I'm stepping on a duck.
Oh my god. And there's no air circulation in here. This is not fair.
I'm kidding.
I wasn't looking at you.
Apparently, this sounds so realistic.
We're not doing news this week. We're just skipping straight to this stuff.
It's just fart jokes. Great.